Hail cheaters, and welcome to another episode of the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. I am your host, Brandon, and I am joined, as always, by Josh. Josh, how are you today?
I am doing well, Brandon. How are you?
I'm good. We're back from the long, exciting international break coming off of game week 9, the game week of the poor captaining of Graciano Pelle. He finally stopped... Per your record with him last season, as soon as you got Pelle in, he stopped producing.
Yeah, so a Kolarov level chilling effect that I had on him.
Yeah, you are the FPL cooler. First it was Kolarov earlier this season. You brought him in, and he hasn't got a single clean sheet since you brought him in, nor has he
even played. I
didn't
think I had a point from him, right? Was it maybe 2 points in one game? I think it was 0-0-2-0.
So I think we both burned points going into game week 9. Well, which is I know a lot of managers out there burn points. But what's interesting is both of us had two frees going into the international break. So you'd think we'd be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I made the exact same error 4 weeks ago, which is that I'm too obsessed I'm trying to climb up the rankings right now, you know? And so when you give me 2 weeks, it's just like a week too long for me to outthink myself and sort of like try to be really clever or go for differential moves. And, you know, the smart, like, so that I made sort of two, like, I made one move with my brain and one move with my heart this week. My gut, maybe not my heart. Sure. I don't love Wilfred Bowen that much. It wasn't from the heart.
He seems like a really nice guy.
But I picked up Wilfred Bony, and I picked
up... He's got that cool sort of like wide stance walk, which I find very charming.
Oh, I don't know if I tweeted this out or if I just thought that I should tweet this out. He is by far... I mean, he's got to be the slowest player in the Premier League.
He may have rickets. I am not entirely sure.
It's amazing. There were all these Man City drives where they're like screaming down the flanks, and like the camera, you know, like widens out, and you can see the whole field, and Bony is nowhere to be found. And he finally, 10, 15 seconds later,
he's just trundling up the pitch like, here comes Bony.
And he even scored a goal in the Yaya Toure mold, the kind of like falls over, the like fell over while he was doing it. You know, it's
there's something in the water there in the Ivory Coast, I suppose.
Yeah, well, are you referencing the fact that apparently he had malaria in the offseason?
Wait, was this his like Michael Jordan's flu game? This was Bony's malaria game?
Well, apparently he had malaria during preseason training, and this is why he started poorly. It was just revealed after that. I think he was like waiting for his first good game to admit this so that it didn't sound like he was making excuses.
So are you telling me that Man City isn't requiring that these guys take their malaria pills when they travel abroad? Because listen, I just spent 2 weeks in India last February, and you better believe I was pumping that malaria detox into my system.
Yeah, seriously. So I brought it. Brought in Bony, who I really should have capped it. I had enough like recklessness to bring him in.
That's hindsight talking. Don't say you should have captained Bony. Yeah, he wasn't a guaranteed start.
No, that's true. And then so I brought in Bony. I brought in Pelle, who we talked about extensively on the podcast. Seemed like the best candidate. He almost picked up an assist. Had a couple opportunities. Actually, he could have scored on that second Southampton goal. He just missed it. You know, came off the post.
Yeah.
And or I don't know if it came off the post or if it just fell down into the defender's feet. Either way, it was nearly a goal. So Bony works out fantastically. I'm very excited to have him now, actually, too, because now that it looks like he's in form, I don't expect big returns in the Manchester Derby, but then the next two fixtures after that are great fixtures. And you know, as long as Aguero's out, I mean, you have an 8 million, basically the only forward option on that team. 8 million Man City forward. So
yeah, and he'll just benefit from that ball being moved around by the Man City midfield, because basically his main function as a human is a finishing machine.
Yeah, exactly. So he actually should have had 19 points instead of 16, because he had an assist or what should have been an assist to Ahi. Do you know how to say this guy's name? Ahi Nacho.
Yeah, that seems fine.
Ahinico?
Can we just call him Nacho?
Yeah, let's call him Kalichi Nacho.
Okay. Which sounds like a great combination of fruit and an appetizer.
Yeah, it does. It sounds like it sounds like we're trying to make fun of him, which I'm not trying to do. Anyway, he had a great pass. Nacho was flagged for being offside, even though he wasn't offside. But I knew I'd banked 16 with Boney, so I wasn't gonna.
I mean, that's similar to how I felt watching the Swansea Stoke game when IU had the backheel assist to Shelby, who pinged this shot off the inside of the far post, and somehow this ball comes back out of the goal.
I thought that might have been far enough in that they were going to. That the little watch on the ref's watch was.
Well, I think.
I guess if it pings out,
if it comes out, there's no way it's crossed the line. How does it cross the line and come out?
No, of course it just it was incredible how close that was. So Boney was the heart decision, and then Pele was the kind of stat brain decision, and just everything indicated that he was the player to bring in. Everybody brought him in this week, right? I think he was transferred in by 485,000 people brought him in this week. Out of 3.3 million players, that is an incredible number. That is the shocking number.
So who was your third transfer that you ultimately ended up burning 4 points on?
So I brought in Zabaleta, and I don't really even know what I was thinking. I was just, first of all, I shouldn't have burned a transfer at all, because burning a transfer for a defender is just
suicide.
It's just it's really a mistake. I mean, you could argue that you're making a long-term move, the Zabaleta thing could pay off long-term. So I won't cast he looked really dangerous in the game, and he had a great assist to the assist on the first the ball that kind of fell to Boney, and then he tapped it over to Raheem Sterling.
Right. Okay. So you officially
got two from him,
and you officially renamed your team Kindergarten Klopp. Just to
Klopp and a half.
Oh, Klopp and a half. Right. So where did Klopp and a half finish on game week 9?
I said finish on 60 points. I suppose you could say 56 minus 4 points. So
you grossed 56.
I grossed 56. A perfectly respectable scoreline.
You're above average. The average was 51.
Another one of these sort of head heart decisions that if I had 1 week to make a decision, I would have captained Alexis Sanchez. He was the player I planned on captaining. He was the logical choice with Aguero out. He's in great form. He scored while he was playing for Chile. He's been scoring, every game in the Premier League.
But similar to Boney, it wasn't a 100% certainty that he was going to start given the international travel.
Yeah.
I think I would have captained Sanchez. I ended up captaining De Bruyne, who we'll get to my transfers in a moment.
Yeah.
Had Sanchez been a guaranteed start, I mean, they were playing Watford, not exactly the toughest task. You could see Sanchez starting on the bench, and your captaincy blows up in your face.
Yeah, he's come from the bench before off an international break, and it seemed like the most sensible move was to start Pele. Been playing very well, great underlying stats, scored for Italy, playing against a Leicester team that has not kept a clean sheet all year. So I'm not too annoyed about it, but it was just that a lot of the other captain options came off this week. So it was a little, honestly, it was a strange week because I got, I got two clean sheets. I got, let's see, 1, 2, 4 goals and 2 assists. And I finished with 60 points, and it just seems – it was a little disappointing that I got a -1 from Russell Martin.
I mean, if you were to have this kind of point haul in the first 5 weeks, you would have been loving it.
Yeah.
I would have been loving it.
Yeah. So it was I'm just glad this game week is over. the 2 weeks off, there was just too much going on.
Yeah.
It was too stressful. So many injuries and so much, it was you didn't know if Kolarov was a confirmed out until the last minute. It looked like he was probably fine.
Yeah.
And then now he's training again. So what had been said a couple weeks ago, which said he wasn't going to be ready for the Manchester Derby, now it doesn't seem like it's true anymore. So it was just like, I'm glad the stress is over.
Well, I beat you on our head to head. So I have, after 9 weeks, I go, 5 wins to your 4, which is very pleasing, but somehow my game week felt a little unearned because if you go back and listen to the last episode of Always Cheating, you gave me some transfer advice, which, frankly, was really good advice, and I couldn't not take it, and I kind of felt gross when I ultimately made those transfers. If you recall, I brought in De Bruyne and Vardy, getting rid of Aguero and Mark Albrighton, which allowed me to get Vardy in. Mm-hmm. And then who was my other transfer that I ended up... Oh, and then Sanchez out for Hazard. Mm-hmm. So that all combined to get me 63 net and a transfer penalty at 59 for 59 gross. So right. Here, the BK Broilers, I thought... See, I had one of those game weeks where after Saturday, I was flying high. Like, everything seemed to be working out when... I got two goals from Jamie Vardy, really feeling it, and I went up to, I was in the 300,000 range overall, and then the next two games, Sunday you had Norwich and Newcastle, and then Monday's Swansea Stoke, just totally reset, and I fell like 100,000 spots just based on me netting 3 points over those next two games.
I couldn't even check my rankings after that. It was just too depressing.
Let's see. So right now I'm at 414,703, 442 points overall.
That's really not that bad. Which, you know, given that I think I'm only about 20 points behind you, maybe a little less than that actually. Maybe more like 18 points.
Yeah, 18 or 19.
And I'm at 690 overall, which isn't a place that I'm necessarily comfortable being in. But given that I was somewhere around like 2.7 million after game week two, and I think I have four green arrows in a row, so the long march back to respectability. And if 18 points is enough to get you up 200,000 spots, then that doesn't seem too discouraging.
No, it's going to be a long road, and we're hardly on our way yet.
So I think I was thinking about this before we recorded the podcast, and I think, you know, we're about a quarter of the way through the season right now, and this is the time of the year where you have to recalibrate your expectations a little bit. You know, yeah,
have to re-goal.
You know, so last year I finished 1530, right? Like just outside the top 1500. So this year the goal, I was, you know, as ambitious as possible. I said, yeah, I want to finish at least in the top 1000, try to get in the top like 200.
Right.
And in hindsight, that seems insane.
Yeah.
But, you know, you aim high at the beginning of the season. Yeah. So now after 9 weeks, obviously I'm not going to finish number one. It's going to be a struggle to finish number one in the Hail Cheaters League. You know, it's just, you know, so now the goal is, you know, just keep climbing up, finish at least in the top 100K, which should be doable. Top 50 seems very doable.
Top 50K?
Top 50K. I mean, we're talking, we've got 29 weeks left.
Yeah, top 100K is always like the minimal goal. I haven't finished outside the top 100,000 since the first year that we started playing this, and I had no idea how to play the game, basically.
Right.
So that's the state of the union for Always Cheating. Let's give the rundown of what we're going to talk about.
You know, we both had pretty good weeks. There was a sadness in that opening segment for some reason.
We strive for perfection, and our listeners expect nothing less. So speaking of before,
because you basically just said I made two transfers that worked out super well, but because you told me to make those transfers, you suggested I make those transfers.
Hey,
like it was almost like. It's like we're playing this larger game, like who's the better fantasy Premier League manager, me or you?
Well, I'm going to stop you right there, Josh, and I'm going to say you're exactly right. And I mean, we shouldn't even have to put too fine a point on that.
No,
we're not playing this for points totals. We're playing this just to beat people.
Right. And nor is there any debate about who the better player is anyway.
Yeah. The guy who finishes number one in the entire FPL isn't like, oh, man, I'm really satisfied. I was really targeting 3,200 points this season. No, right. the guy is targeting one more point than whoever is in second, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So let's take a look at the Hail Cheaters League, Brandon.
All right, Josh. How are we doing with the Hail Cheaters League after 9 weeks?
All right, so we have we've got another 58 managers this week, which brings us to 157 total.
Amazing! Welcome, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for joining. The top 10. There's actually quite a bit of shakeup in the top 10. Colin Bothwell remains pretty substantially on top. He had scored 67 points. He's on 569 total. I think he did move just a little bit outside the top 100.
Yeah, he's ranked 175 now.
Okay, so he's ranked a terrible 175 in the world. Major disappointments for him.
Really? You could do better, Colin.
Yeah, come on, Colin.
He started Cameron Jerome up front, which might not have been part of his master plan there.
Yeah, you know, and I had been, as you know, started in week three or week four, I mean, I am like the leader of the DMRC Mobikani bandwagon. I knew this guy was going to, and this guy, he scored in every league he's played in.
You have don't you have a t-shirt that has Mobikani like in the Che Guevara sort of silhouette?
Actually, it's one of those, it's like a million images, like a million tiny images of Mobikani.
That make that up form, one giant Mobikani.
They just form one Bob Dylan. I was going to guess
Yoda.
I meant to say Bob Marley, and then I said Bob Dylan for some reason.
Well, same difference.
Even funnier, like the idea of a million DMRC Mobikanis forming one, like early, like
Jewish Wisconsinite,
freewheeling Bob Dylan era. Sure. Yeah, look. So Isle of Mabumbu has moved back into second place. Gear Meld, I think is probably maybe how you say his name.
That sounds about right.
He's at 543. And then Stone Cold Stunners are now in third. That's Mark Johnson's team. Hippo FC in fourth, Pat Vivat. So it's pretty tightly clustered. And then Nyam Nyam, Hugh Patrick Campbell. You can only say that fast. You can't say Nyam Nyam.
You got to say Nyam Nyam. Yeah. I really want a third Nyam Nyam there, so it would be Nyam Nyam Nyam.
So he's at 528, actually tied with the Axe Murderers, who are also at 528.
That's a real pleasant name.
Yeah, the highest score was Yippie Kabai.
And this has to be hands down the new best name in the Hail Cheaters mini league.
That is a fantastic name.
A diehard reference, clearly. And we did get confirmation of the Stole Cold Stunners. That is a Steve Austin reference. So Yippie Kabai, mother leapers.
And I think if the Die Hard prequel does actually come out as rumor, then I think he might have changed his name in protest.
So,
all right. So I'm curious. Okay, so we'll drill down just a little bit here. So
yeah, I've got
scored 105 points.
Yeah, guess how somebody's going to break 100 this week.
Yeah, there's really only two things had to happen. One was he had to make the right captain choice. There were a couple obvious ones, or not, I shouldn't say obvious ones, but Diego Costa, who. Well, you know, I would say that we were not on the Diego Costa bandwagon. I mean,
you definitely pinpointed him last week as
someone who could score.
Yeah,
certainly.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
You seemed to keep circling back to him for some reason.
I had this moment on Friday where I was certain that I should have brought in Diego Costa. You know, just I was trying to find ways to fit Costa into my team that made sense, and then ultimately I just decided I wanted to bring in Boney, who had the same kind of risky feel, but would give me $2 million that I could use later, which is probably going to end up turning Gomis into Romelu Lukaku.
Yeah, and I'd much rather bet on that Man City team than this Chelsea team. I mean, they managed to pull out a 2-0 win against Villa, but it was hardly convincing, and that team is riddled with problems.
So, Costa scored a goal and assist, had 3 bonus points. We'll see if he can keep it up. I mean, obviously, if he can, then he's the rarest of things, which is a consistent striker on a good team who's also a differential. That does not come around very often. So,
no.
But it still seems a little risky. The fixtures coming up for Chelsea are not. They're okay. Away to West Ham, home to Liverpool, away to Stoke. They're not, it's hard to get too excited about that. But, you know, again, 11 million striker, you know, but he did play and they didn't score, you know, in today's Champions League game either. So it seems like the consistency still isn't quite there with that team.
Yeah, it's hard to tell if Chelsea smells like burning tires or burning trash right now.
So we'll get into that in a minute. But just to finish our tribute to Yippie Kabai, basically he's got everybody you'd want right now.
I know, this midfield is blowing my mind, my face is melting.
Myhill, who I'm still kicking myself about not bringing in my wild card. I know they had, you know, a couple bad weeks, but so consistent this year.
Yeah.
Hector Bellerin, Johan Kabai, who is so undervalued at 6.5 million. Kabai's, 9, 14, and 9 in the last 3 games from Kabai.
Yeah. I mean, he does – some of that point tally relies on Crystal Palace getting penalties, though they seem very capable of getting penalties. It is a point of worry.
And then, 25 from Wijnaldum, and that was the big difference. And then Wijnaldum thing, I guess
– Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, did you? We're going to get into this in just a second, but I didn't realize anybody had this guy. I mean, looking back at his numbers, it's not bad, you know. I mean,
you have
2 goals and an assist coming into this game week, but with so many other midfield options out there heading into this game week or the last couple, I don't think we've even talked about him in the podcast as an option.
Well, no, because why would we be talking about any Newcastle asset apart from Cool Guy Cruel?
poor Cruel.
It is a cruel world, and we're just living in it. But, to bet on any Newcastle player, even after this game, again, we're going to touch upon Newcastle in just a moment.
I guess we can go. Let's go right into it.
Yeah, all right. So, I mean, Newcastle, they're just incredibly inconsistent. They were one of the worst teams in the league going into this game week. They lost their stalwart keeper, who kept them in many a game this season and seasons past. Mm-hmm. And they are just an ill-disciplined team. I was pleased to see Cheick Tiote back in the lineup because it's the best drinking game to play if you really want to get drunk is, you know, take a shot every time Tiote lunges into an ill-timed tackle or take a square on when he's going to get his first yellow card.
Yeah.
And he was true to form. And in particular, Moussa Sissoko. That's a guy who he's kind of guaranteed to have 3 to 4 really stunning weeks in a season. But then he will be the invisible man for the rest of the season, and I pity you if you invested in him.
Now, I will say the player that I had talked about bringing in a couple weeks ago on the podcast before the Aguero injury kind of upended everybody's team was Ayoze Perez, who picked up 10 points this game week. So here's the thing about Newcastle is, I mean, everything you said is true. Everything we've seen so far from them, you know, in coming off that disaster at home away to Man City, made it seem like a very uninspiring choice. I mean, I think a lot of us feel like Steve McClaren is probably on the way out, but they have now scored 6 points or they scored 6 goals in this game, and nobody has better fixtures over the next, you know, at least the next 5 weeks, I'd say. I mean, away to Sunderland, you know, which is a derby, so it's a little trickier maybe, but, you know, certainly you'd expect goals in that game. Home to Stoke, away to Bournemouth, home to Leicester.
Yeah.
And then away to Crystal Palace in week 14, which is not a particularly scary fixture either. I mean, it really is worth considering bringing in. So for me, you know, I have this situation right now, which is that I have hung on to Eden Hazard for far too long, and now he's not even a consistent starter. So I have an 11 million, you know, midfielder who has done nothing all year.
Remember last week when I was regretting having already swapped Hazard for Sanchez?
Yeah,
that was all wiped away when those lineups were announced.
Yeah, who would have thought
Hazard? It was nuts.
I thought about captaining him. You know, I mean, he actually was my assistant captain this week.
Yeah, I mean, Mourinho is just torpedoing that team right now.
Yeah, it's just a disaster. It's just not a team I want to be. You just don't know what you're going to get. I mean, as evidenced by this 0-0 game in the Champions League today. I mean, it's just not. And you know, Hazard and Costa started in that game.
Josh, you wouldn't even play for Chelsea right now, would you?
I wouldn't. No, I would not, Brandon. So if I turned Hazard into Wijnaldum, I would actually have 6.5 million in my bank, which is maybe the most I've ever had in my bank in any given game week. I mean, that would be so much money that I could actually.
You're going to go out and buy a PlayStation 4.
I would have enough money to turn Gomis into Aguero. I mean, that's how much money I would have. And you know, it's interesting because I've been bad mouthing Costa, but it would be an interesting idea to turn Gomis into Diego Costa, possibly. Or I guess the obvious move is to turn him into Lukaku.
Yeah. So I mean, turn him into something for the love of God.
But Wijnaldum is so he's actually a pretty. I was actually prepared before this podcast to sort of say, "Don't do it." You know, invest your money elsewhere. You know, head towards goodbye. But I mean, you know. 6 goals, 1 assist, 4 bonus points so far in the year.
Yeah.
6.8, very affordable. I mean, this is incredible sort of like just sort of a band of mid-price midfielders who who you want to have. Right? I mean, like, there's a kind of a template in place right now, which I think is that you want Sanchez, and then you want a whole bunch of these mid-priced midfielders. I mean,
right.
If you had the money, you know, the Mahrez situation is something we all have to monitor now. I mean, I'm not inclined to bring him out, given how
he's still getting points. He got four points off of one half.
And given how we started the season, I mean, you have to keep the faith a little bit. Obviously, if he's going to come off the bench if it happens even one more week, I guess that's probably, you know, you got to get rid of him. But, you know, home to Crystal Palace, away to West Brom, home to Watford in the next three fixtures.
Mahrez is hardly a concern right now, because I think pretty much everybody who has him still stands to turn a profit if he drops a little bit in value.
Yeah. So, but I think if you still had, I mean, because Paya I feel great about. He's at 7.9. I guess he's at 8.1 now. I bought him when he was cheaper. I mean, his run, I mean, Paye, okay, so, well, okay, we'll get to this in a minute when we talk about must-own players, but 5 goals and 3 assists from Paye so far through 9 weeks is absolutely amazing.
It is.
So Newcastle, so are you thinking about bringing anybody in? Is there anybody that,
well,
that
this
turned your head a little bit price-wise or in terms of stats or anything else?
Yeah, this could be me just playing devil's advocate, but if you look at the 6-goal haul that City had against Newcastle a couple weeks ago, the story there was, of course, how well Aguero played, and he looked amazing. Hardly anybody was talking about how terrible Newcastle was. I mean, maybe that was just assumed. But then watching this Norwich-Newcastle game, I could say that Newcastle was incredibly flattered by how absolutely slapstick comedy the Norwich team organization and their defense was. And
but 2 assists from Martin Olsen, by the way, on Newcastle. Yeah. How weird was that?
That was weird. He looked very dangerous on the flank. And like I was saying about Sissoko, and the commentators on NBC made sure to highlight this too, that even though Sissoko was like pulling assists out like he was giving kittens away, he was at fault for leaving Olsen wide open on those wings to put in those crosses.
Yeah. This is why Sissoko has never made the move to a larger club.
Oh, yeah. I think he's quite happy where he is. I mean, did you see how pleased Papi Cisse was to be coming into that game? He's just like, hey, it's a party. This is great.
Hey, we'll always have Papi Cisse's banana goal against Chelsea.
I mean,
seasons change. That goal is eternal.
Seasons change. What is that that band?
Future
Islands. He is the Papi Cisse is the Future Islands.
We'll always be waiting on him.
But that season was the Newcastle season. You had Demba Ba and you had Papi Cisse basically battling it out for who was going to be the top goal scorer week to week.
Yeah, that's true.
So, the point there is, I still can't be trusting of Newcastle. To ultimately come around and answer your question, I would put forward that Mitrovic would be the one to buy. At 6.2, all the pundits point to his attitude, which seems to be tremendous. He plays hard. The goals he's gotten this season have been incredibly well taken. The way he chest controlled that cross for his goal against Norwich was stellar.
Yeah, he's such a yellow card threat. It was, you know, two yellows and a red in the first, you know, 9 fixtures.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
That includes two games that he had to miss.
If you put him up against Perez, Ayoze Perez, though, I just feel like Mitrovic is just a little more for the eye test, he just looks a little more class.
Yeah, I guess if you were looking to move Gomis and make a bit of a differential move, I actually think I would go with Ayoze Perez in that case. I don't know. I like the way he looked, especially in that Chelsea game. I mean, this is more of like a this is definitely like the heart, not the head, talking here. You know, but yeah. I don't know. I like him a little bit more. But Wijnaldum, so Wijnaldum is an interesting one because I mean, I'm inclined to agree with you. It seems a little rash that, you know, this guy scores 4 goals. Everybody, you know, makes a move to bring him in. But being that I have this midfield problem that has to get solved. You know, and I don't necessarily have
mainly
to
being Hazard.
Mainly being Hazard. And I don't really have any other pressing moves to make. My defenders are fine this week. My forwards are fine. It kind of, I don't know, it maybe makes sense to make this move.
Now, I'm not asking for the general community out there.
Coming up too.
I'm not asking for the community out there, Josh. I'm I'm just asking for somebody who may be playing head-to-head against you next week. Would you consider burning 4 points this coming week in this move? Like, because if you go Hazard to Wijnaldum, you've got a lot of cash there to upgrade somebody else in a major way.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the Gomis thing is so frustrating, obviously. And Gomis is definitely gone starting in week 11. But I think I kind of like that away fixture at Aston Villa.
I know. It is painful to look at that because I have both IU and Gomis, and Swansea just looked completely finished against Stoke yesterday.
I don't know what's going on with that team. I mean, they were so dangerous at the beginning of the season, and now it just seems like, you know, things are falling apart a little bit. I thought Gomis looked better in this game than he did in the home game to Tottenham the week before.
Yeah, he's just very isolated. Yeah. And you do wonder, Sigurdsson came in the second half. They seem to be missing that link between, I mean, Shelvey does as much as he can to get forward, but there's still no proper link play happening there.
Yeah, that was a very. I turned it on for the first 2 minutes just to kind of see what the formations look like, and yeah, all I saw was Boyan look like Lionel. I mean, like it was a Lionel Messi move, like all the way through, like just like you know this little guy like brushing everybody off. I mean, absolutely schooling Ashley Williams, we've sung his praises on many podcasts.
Yeah, he went into that tackle like he thought he was going in against Wayne Rooney instead of a former Barcelona player.
It was bizarre, and then he got a yellow later. He was all fired up for that game. It was almost like Dwight Gale in that Crystal Palace game. Just I think the international break gets to some of these players too, and they're just like ready to get back out there.
I don't know. I don't want to continually be negative, but I do think the Swansea defense on that play flattered Boyan a little bit, and Williams kind of just got sucked in. And
yeah, but that was a clear penalty.
No, I do not argue that at all. I'm not arguing.
Nor did Williams, actually.
Yeah, no.
I think Williams basically, yep, that's a penalty.
Yeah, no, that was a great call, and I don't want to discredit Boyan from drawing that foul, and it was well-deserved. But he found so much space, which is A, a skill, but B, it was almost given to him.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, the first few weeks of the season, Swansea seemed like a team where they're great in the sum of their parts. I mean, individually, it's not a team that blows you away.
Right,
you know,
right.
I mean, you've got players like Sigurdsson, who, you know, is a very good player, but, you know, it's not like he was good last year, but, you know, he certainly isn't consistent, as evidenced by his time at Spurs, right?
Yeah, no, it's true.
Yeah, so AU looks fantastic still. He looked good in this game.
He did. He certainly has the highest work rate on that team right now.
Yeah.
So we talked about how we feel about Newcastle, and we've talked about who the essential players on Newcastle might be, which takes us to our next burning question. Now that Aguero, some might say the only essential player in the FPL right now, is out of the spotlight, are there any essential players that we need to have in our team at this very moment?
Yeah, so the two immediately spring to mind, and again, like, we're going to be talking about very obvious options here, but the
signal here is essential.
Yeah, these are not the diamonds in the rough or whatever, but first one is Alexis Sanchez, who I think is absolutely essential, right? Especially, I mean, you know, at his price, if you have him and Alexis, or him and Aguero, that can create some problems, but without Aguero, there's no reason not to have Sanchez. I mean, he's the number one most essential player in the Premier League right now.
Agreed. He had a bit of a rocky start to the season, but it's been made very abundantly clear that that was just a slow start, and now he is back firing in all cylinders.
Absolutely. And so aggressive and in shooting more. I mean, he and Mesut Ozil both actually are really shooting a lot more.
Yeah, I feel kind of lucky that I was in some way forced to stay the course with Ozil and ended up with both Sanchez and Ozil in my midfield, which, you know, could be sort of betting too much on Arsenal, but right now they both are integral to that attack.
You know, it pains me to say this, but I think that Jamie Vardy is approaching essential status too.
Another guy I happen to have in my team.
Yeah, and I don't, and I have the same dilemma that you had, which was that I have to I just have to do some surgery in order to bring him in. I have to drop you never want to make a goalkeeper transfer. But I guess I could get rid of Wes Morgan and use that money to, I don't know. It's not a money thing. It's a squad issue.
Right.
So I it just seems like, I mean, you know,
8 goals in 6 games, for the love of God.
And we talked about stats in the
and that's not like Wijnaldum, sort of, he got like a million goals in one game and none in the other.
Right. So just based on everything that we looked at, forward stats a couple weeks ago, he is absolutely central to that offense. A more reliable player at this point, given that we don't necessarily know if...
Mahrez, the tables have totally turned, and Mahrez is expendable now. Guardy's not.
Scored 2, probably could have scored more. I mean, he very much looks like the Charlie Austin of this year. I mean,
he's kind of
waiting a few weeks, like, who's going to be the, you know, I think everyone's been looking for the Charlie Austin, the Harry Kane type, and he's still only $6.9 million. I mean, he's still cheaper than Gomis.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, he's skyrocketed over the weekend, and that price is going to keep going up, 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 because I think he's going to linger there on the top 3 strikers for, you know, the next few months.
I mean, he was added by 500,000 people between game weeks 7 and 8, and then another 241,000 last week. So he is now owned by something like a third of the league.
It is a testament to how sensational the Pele performance was against Chelsea that all of the talk going into game week 9 was Pele, 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 get him in. You got to get him in. And Vardy sort of missed out there.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's not like nobody was talking about him, but.
It's only one game. So, you know, Vardy scored, Pele didn't. Doesn't mean that you know, over the long haul that Pele isn't a more valuable person. I mean, as you know, given all of the attacking stats, it looks like Pele is absolutely central to that offense. We know that he's going to be, you know, getting assists from Mane and from Tadic, and
essential?
No, I don't think he is essential. No, but I'm just saying that I think that Jamie Vardy seems a little more. I mean, part of what makes him essential is his price. You know, if you were an 11 million forward, then, you know, he wouldn't be as essential, I think. But given that you can bring in someone that cheap and then that money can be spent to build an even stronger team elsewhere, and given how consistent it looks like he is going to be, right? I mean, he scored 9 goals, and those 9 goals are spread out over, you know, it looks like 7 games.
Right.
You know, it's been actually he scored in every game since game week 4.
Yeah.
So, you know, just in 2 goals in 2 of the last 3 games.
Yeah.
So it's killing me not to have Vardy right now.
Okay, so we've got Alexis and we've got Vardy. You mentioned Payet. So Payet is put into the essential category.
He's pretty close, I would say. And part of what makes him essential again is that, you know, for $8 million, you're getting a player who just seems to have a nose for goal, a nose for, you know, both scoring goals and getting assists and racking up bonus points. He's picked up 12 bonus points in the first 9 weeks of the season so far.
Yeah, and that goal that he scored against Crystal Palace in the dying minutes was a dagger in the heart of anyone like me, who I still just smell the slightest hint of ode to bandwagon on him. That goal was just a dagger, and it's.
Yeah,
it reminded me of the Harry Kane game against Chelsea last year, where he scored he scored 2 goals and had 2 assists, or did he score a hat trick? Whatever that was the game in which I was like, all right, got to get Kane in. Enough of this. So yeah. I mean, I'm undecided as to whether to bring Payet in, but the bandwagon smell is gone.
Yeah, I think he's pretty close. I think Mahrez has lost his essential status because we just don't know if he's going to be starting every week.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, so this stuff is all subject to change. I don't think there are any defenders that I would classify as essential. I mean, Hector Bellerin is starting to make an argument for himself.
I don't know. Arsenal can keep the run of clean sheets going, then I'd say most definitely Bellerin.
Five clean sheets in the last 7 games.
Been the story of this season. Yeah. Clean sheets, I mean, since... Man City went off the boil defensively. There's no guarantees anywhere.
Yeah. So I think maybe no defenders. Myhill certainly kind of seems essential, but again, how often are you making goalkeeper transfers? So,
yeah,
if I was playing a wild card, I would certainly bring in Mihal.
Yeah. Well, that said, Butland for me would be essential in my wild card because I think just this weekend he finally went up from 4.5 to 4.6. No, he's still at 4.5.
He's still 4.5,
which is just unbelievable to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is the in-form goalkeeper. I mean, I know Stoke is not known for their clean sheets right now, but he's getting crazy save points. He is coming off of a clean sheet. Yep. He's got the start for England. You've got to bring him in.
Yeah, home to Watford in week 10.
Yeah.
Alexis Sanchez.
Yeah, we got Sanchez, we've got Vardy, we have Payet.
Maybe Payet. Yeah. Anybody else? Payet? I think it's Payet.
Payet.
Yeah. You say the T? I don't think you do.
Yeah, I think you got to have a double TE to say.
Okay.
I took French class in high school.
Is there anyone else we're missing? I mean, Kabay is starting to feel like an essential player, isn't he? I mean, his price has not changed at all.
Yeah,
he has scored 9, 14, and 9, and he's still 6.5. He is owned by 13% of the league.
Yeah.
What an incredible – their next game is away to Leicester.
I really, really, really want him in my team. But again, like I had mentioned earlier, my one concern there are all these prices or all these points based on the necessity of getting a penalty for Crystal Palace.
Yeah. Well, the part of the problem is you're starting to run out of midfield spots at some point.
This week I had Sanchez, De Bruyne, Ayew, Mahrez, Ozil. So I'm going to bench either Ayew or Mahrez, and I ended up benching Mahrez. But I think a lot of people are having this problem where we're used to having an expendable fifth midfielder, one that that is probably guaranteed to start but is going to be of the Westwood caliber.
I am of the opinion that I don't like to put myself in that position. I like to have a cheap fifth midfielder because – and part of it is I don't like the stress of it, you know, like just the endless decision making that you have to do when you've got an expensive fifth midfielder.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just because I'm so naturally inclined to play three forwards. It's so hard for me to break from that mold.
Yeah.
And you hear a lot of people are like, you know, often like I feel like if I'm trolling through like the Fantasy Football Scout, the chat sections or whatever, you know, and people are always talking about like fifth midfield or third forward rotations. But in my experience, those don't really work because the problem is it takes a lot of courage to, you know, let's say you've got a forward, like a cheap forward, like a Perez or something like that. And they score two goals in a game, right? Like, so Perez is 10 points in this game.
Okay.
He scored 10 points in the Norwich game. So
I believe
if you're working out for rotation, you've got a player that you want to – a fifth midfielder you want to play more in the next fixture. You're benching a guy who just picked up 10 points, which is – you know, so you're sort of rejecting form for fixture right off the bat.
Right.
And I just feel like that is very hard for me to do. Like I once someone's scoring, I want to play them all the time. You know, I don't want to hold to my rotation. And so it's hard for me to stick with the plan.
Yeah. So we've kind of stated the obvious in picking the essential players. I would also put forward, this is kind of like picking your favorite Street Fighter character. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm a Ryu guy, and who are you?
I'm Chun-Li.
Chun-Li, okay. So, yep. And you believe that her special skills are essential to the way you play Street Fighter?
Yeah, that's fair. It's really, I'm really more of a Tekken 3 guy, to be totally honest with you.
Oh, so we're just playing different games entirely.
That's true.
Which kind of makes sense. All right, so speaking of games, we're going to, we're hardly going to review Game Week 9 here. There was one fixture that I think we hardly hit upon in what we've already discussed on the podcast. Spurs-Liverpool, the opening fixture for Jurgen Klopp's Premier League career. And it was a 0-0 draw, and fantasy-wise, the eye is drawn to the Spurs defense. Did we learn any lessons from either the Spurs performance or the Liverpool performance over the weekend?
I don't know how much we learned from it, from a fantasy point of view. The Liverpool team is, you know, it's just, I don't know, like that team is so shorn of its it is so far from 100% right now.
Yeah.
Given how many players are injured.
So many players.
They lost two. I can't believe they lost Danny Ings for the whole season. So they lost Ings and they lost Gomez and Sturridge was out. So
I also feel a little robbed that we didn't get to see Ings go out. Like, he just went out in training and that's the end of it. We didn't have a chance to say goodbye.
Well, Gomez too, right?
Yeah.
So just a strange week. I think it made sense to set up a little more defensively, although I would argue that you could make a case that Liverpool had the better scoring chances in this game. I thought Divock Origi had a pretty good chance in the first, 20, 30 minutes of the game.
Yeah, they were certainly running around like a house on fire, looking for those chances, looking to throw in those tackles, and they...
Yeah, it kind of settled in the last 30 minutes or so.
Yeah, I thought they looked decent, though, but it does then... look good for Spurs that they were able to hold tight, and they do have the best. What do they have? The best defense in the league,
Spurs? Right now?
Yeah,
yeah, maybe. I don't know. I still like the Man U defense actually. I mean,
I'm talking like quantitatively. Like they've let in what, just 7 goals, I think, which is
just in terms of the actual goals allowed. Yeah, I think they probably do actually.
And Toby Alderweireld, he's at 5.2 now. He seems to be the favored defender there for Spurs.
Good value. We'll score the occasional goal. He was a person I had actually thought about bringing in instead of Zabaleta, which it's like in hindsight, it was a crazy move. I don't know what I was thinking. I just outthought myself.
Yeah, the problem with Spurs here is that they have the classic sort of mixed bag run coming up.
The highlight of that game, though, by far, was the moment when Adam Lallana got subbed off. Did you see this?
Yes, I did see it on Twitter. It was
someone joked that he gave Klopp a hug like a kid who only sees his dad on the weekends. Like for like a few hours in the weekends, it was like this full bodied, like it was a crazy, like he hadn't done anything in the game. Like it was a 0-0 game. It was still in doubt. And it was like this, it was just such a like valedictory. It made no sense. I don't know what was going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. So the 10 o'clock round of fixtures was completely insane. There were 6 games going on at the same time. I hardly knew what to watch.
Yeah, it was a little overload after two, and so much scoring, and after 2 weeks off, I was so amped up. I think I was a little overstimulated.
we were talking before we started the podcast about how this weirdly was a week where we were amped up, but probably paid the least amount of attention to all the games.
I think it was like my brain was like a stress management thing.
Yeah, I mean, looking ahead to game week 11, our Everton target week. I watched the first half of Everton Man U, and it left me completely clueless as to whether or not that investment is really happening.
Like, I thought you were joking about watching that game.
No. I felt like the fan was, the FPL manager was probably not watching Everton Man U.
Just a pure watch.
But it was a pure watch, and it was really kind of like watching a kitten get kicked. Poor Everton. They were just weirdly outclassed.
That's a strange result. I guess you can blame some of that on the break. I guess I don't know. That was a very strange.
Yeah.
I guess Man U had something to prove after the Arsenal game. I watched the Man City game with delight. It was amazing. I mean, Boney scored one of the easiest goals you'll ever score. That's the kind of goal that a striker needs to like get back into form, right?
Yeah.
He hadn't scored all year. He gets Adam Federici, drops a ball. He basically like lays a ball into his lap and he's just like, if you just move forward, it'll be a goal. Don't even like kick it. Just move your body forward and you're going to score a ball.
You can tell that Federici trains with Arthur Burić and they just have drills that they run of how to gift goals to strikers.
Apparently Burić was injured in the warmups. So, I mean, Federici had no warning at all. So I don't blame him too much.
How could you?
I was delighted.
I wouldn't blame him like I blame a guy like Ruddy.
Yeah. So I was watching most of that game because I wanted to see if my Boney pick would work out. Crazy, stupid, against the run of play goal from Glenn Murray, which immediately destroyed my like little Zabaleta punt.
Yeah, and as was pointed out on the @HailCheaters Twitter feed, dumb Jesus Navas robbed me of a Joe Hart assist.
Yeah, that was crazy. That guy cannot score. It's like he made like some sort of like Mephistophelian deal. Like it's like he like can get everything in the world that he wants, but he cannot score a goal.
Well, look at Pellegrini. That guy probably is Mephistopheles.
That's true, actually. He's like a weird, like, half vampire, half demon.
Yeah. I think the aftermath of a lot of these Game Week 9 fixtures is going to sort of come out as we preview all the fixtures in Game Week 10. So what do you think? Should we just jump into what's coming up and jump into the optimizer?
Let's jump into the optimizer. Let's do our preview.
Okay, so first fixture. Oh, no 7:45 a.m. Fixture for all us on Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, I get to sleep in this week.
What a relief. I'll get up and make the coffee for a change. Because usually it's actually twisted in my household. Like, I wake up at 7:45, but I just turn the game on my tablet device. Mm-hmm. And then at some point my wife gets up and she then brings me coffee. And that's the point at which I start to feel a little guilty.
Yeah, right. I think that's fair. That's you got to like run out in between the 10 a.m. games and the 12:30 and like get bagels for the household or something.
Drop off the laundry.
Drop off the laundry.
All right, so we're doing some chores before this 10 a.m. round of fixtures. Who's up first?
So Aston Villa Swansea is the first fixture. This is one. So I'm planning to keep gummies for this game, kind of against my better judgment.
Yeah, which would be the most unhappy stick. In this season of the FPL, in my opinion.
I don't know why I feel rationally. This week's all about like going back to the heart a little bit. You know, I'm regretting my decision to not captain Sanchez. I just feel good about Swansea in this game for some reason. So there's no like, there's no good reason to based on how they looked against Stoke at home. But this Aston Villa team is reeling, and Tim Sherwood, like, he's probably on the block at this point, you know, to get fired.
Oh, without a doubt. I would say if they lose this game, I mean, he's got to be like within a hair.
Well, they wouldn't have won for the first, you know, they would have not had a win for the next 9 weeks after an opening week win at a Bournemouth team that suddenly doesn't look very good at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mostly based on injuries, to be fair, but still.
Yeah, it is a tough call. I've got Ayew and Gomez, and like we said, Ayew still looks very dangerous and hardworking, and he nearly had an assist for my main man, John Joe.
It's got to hurt you a little bit to have Ayew right now, right? I mean, you've got to be, like, at least a little tempted by Paye and by... Kabai, yeah, even Wijnaldum, possibly.
Yeah, so the dilemma there is having Ayew and Gomez. The more fruitful transfer would be to bring somebody in for Ayew. Like the replacements for Gomez seem a little riskier.
Right. Well, the problem is that
Gomez looks more terrible.
Ayew is more valuable when Gomez is playing better. Right,
because he has somebody to pass to.
Yeah, this is what is making Wijnaldum valuable right now. Is it seems like everyone on Swansea or on Newcastle is up for scoring.
Yeah, it also looks like Wijnaldum is basically willing to run into everybody else's channel and take the goals that his teammates ought to be scoring.
I like that Paye does that too. I like it a lot. So I wouldn't have anybody on Aston Villa. I wouldn't start any.
Do you still have Micah Richards in your back line?
Yeah, I do. You know how hard it is to get rid of a 4.5 million defender.
Yeah, that's like Robert Huth, who's just like chilling, eating nacho chips on my bench.
Wes Morgan, who's also on my bench right now, just preventing me from ever bringing in.
well, speaking of the hot garbage that is Leicester's defense, they're the next fixture. Yeah. Leicester versus Crystal Palace.
Yeah, Crystal Palace. They did end up losing that game. They still look pretty good. I thought, from the highlights, I wasn't watching most of that match.
Yeah, they'll be a team this season, I believe, that you'll never really want to bet against, right?
Yeah, and all their midfielders are kind of exciting right now and worth keeping an eye on. But Kabai at 6.5 is just such a so valuable. And you would really expect him to have points in this game. I would be shocked if Kabai didn't do something in this match.
Right.
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, you know, Grant, to be fair, I mean, I don't think he has any points from open play. I think that, let me see here. Is that...
I think he's got at least one goal from open play,
but in the last three games he scored, he has three goals. Let's see. So he had a goal and an assist in the West Brom game. And was the goal he scored against Norwich in week one a that was a goal from open play?
Yes,
at the end of the game. Yeah. So, but the last three games, three goals, not from open play. Is doing other things. So he's picking up bonus points regardless. He has 2-3-2 in the last three fixtures. So yeah, Kabay is someone I'm really tempted by. Hazard to Kabay is something that I would consider this week as well.
Yeah. Curious to see how Vardy looks in this game, because Crystal Palace are very organized. These teams should be evenly matched.
Would you consider captaining Vardy in this game?
That's a tough call.
I mean, I know that Sanchez is the obvious, or the kind of tempting captain choice this week, but
yeah.
I mean, it's not, you know, I mean, Sanchez is not Aguero. I mean, you know, there's argument you made for
looking
elsewhere.
Yeah, and Everton have been a tough team to crack.
I think that really, when you look around at the other options this week, I'm not sure who sticks out as an obvious captain choice. I mean, you know, I think captaining someone like Gomis would be really risky. You know, I don't know that I want to captain a Southampton or Liverpool player in that game. Man U, Man City, I wouldn't be inclined to.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, the one person we didn't talk about at all was Eriksen on Spurs. And he's kind of an interesting midfield transfer and possible captain choice away to Bournemouth.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, God, Christian Eriksen. Do we have to talk about him?
he's just not worth having, right? He's just not quite consistent enough.
Yeah.
And you just have to, like, it's like he scored those two goals against Swansea a couple weeks ago. And
nobody batted an eyelash.
They kind of didn't, right?
I don't even think they talked about it on, like, Guardian's Football Weekly. That's how little people paid attention.
It was just that's what he does. Like, if you have a free kick in a dangerous spot, he is probably going to score, and that's kind of what he does. Like,
yeah.
that's kind of the extent of what he does.
I think my current thinking is targeting that Arsenal-Everton game. Arsenal's coming off of a 2-0 win against Bayern Munich. They played the early Champions League fixture on Tuesday, so they have time to train and rest before Saturday's match, and they will be supremely confident.
Yeah.
So, barring any knocks on the training ground, they could have some joy.
Yeah, some joy. They could. I mean, it's possible.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves
here. All right, yeah. So there could be some joy. Norwich.
Joy could be coming up when we get
Norwich, West Brom. This is like a nil-nil kind of feel to it, doesn't it? I would start defenders on both sides in this
game.
Yeah,
George R. Russell Martin definitely burned us with his dragon fire this weekend, getting completely schooled.
he burnt himself.
He did. He turned the dragon fire onto himself.
I assume the dragons are immune to their own fire, but that does not seem to be the case.
Yeah, we're learning all sorts of things.
Dia Mercy Mbakani, my boy, continues to get it done, and I am very excited about this.
Mr. Bob Dylan himself.
Mr. Bob Dylan.
Yeah, no, I...
It's 5.7. He's got 6-6 in the last two matches. And now they're home to West Brom.
He's also got the weirdest beard haircut combo in the league.
Not a handsome man. Yeah. By my... I grew up in the Midwest standards. Yeah. So, I don't have any taste.
Yeah, no, I like the idea of my lineup starting Craig Dawson against George R. Russell Martin, because then, you know, hopefully they're going to balance out.
Now, right? You just know with two defenders in the same game, it never works out.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, so then we got Stoke Watford. Feeling very good about Jack Butland in this game. I felt a little bad for Watford in that Arsenal game. I couldn't believe that Agallo didn't score. He had one chance where he really was wide open, and it was like he obviously just got the wrong touch on it with his boot, but it was such a bad miss. It was like you assume that something happened,
like a
red card or like a bad tackle. It was crazy.
You know, you feel bad because there's a lot of people out there with Bellerin, Monreal, and Cech, right?
That's part of it. A lot of people have Agallo though too.
That's true.
But yeah, that was they just ran out. I mean, they were outclassed. That Arsenal looked really good in that game. I mean, they really Ozil's an interesting option. I don't think I want to go double Arsenal midfield, because you just know Arsenal being Arsenal, they're gonna like
They'll peter out at some point.
Yeah, they're going to lose 1-0 at home to Everton or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm curious to see how Stoke performs in this Watford game because, I mean, they didn't look great against Swansea, but they did have bright spots. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of just waiting for that one turning point with this Stoke team where they do become great.
Yep. I mean, this would be a game in which
they could do it.
They've had two nice away wins. I mean, I know winning at Aston Villa and Swansea aren't... Well, that Swansea win, to me, is a pretty impressive win.
Yeah, Liberty Stadium is known as having some fortress qualities.
Absolutely. So, I feel very good about that Stoke team at home to Watford. Okay, so the West Ham-Chelsea.
All right.
Final 10 o'clock fixture.
So, no, how are you feeling about Payet in this?
I feel good. I mean, I feel fine. I mean, you know the way West Ham have been playing these top teams. It's they sit back and then they try to get some points on the counter. And I mean, I assume Mourinho will be ready for it. But this has got to be the best time to ever play the Chelsea team, right? I mean, yeah. You keep thinking that, you know, like bad losses like their 0-0 draw today, you know, against Dynamo Kiev is like, okay, now it's gonna change. You know,
yeah.
Now, like, they're finally going to come back. They're going to start destroying teams. But it's not happening.
I mean, apart from the Manchester derby, this, to me, looks like the tastiest fixture of the weekend. I'm really excited to see this game.
Yeah. So there's, like, another, like, controversy with Mourinho calling an official. I mean, this guy, like, I really like Mourinho. I really admire him. I know a lot of people get sick of him. Like, I have a much higher Mourinho tolerance than some people do. But the calling out the penalties thing is just, like, enough. Like,
yeah, leading into this
let
season.
It go.
Yeah. I used to just give him the benefit of the doubt, and I just figured Mourinho was, you know, taking the piss out of everybody at those press conferences. But slowly but surely, he's just appears to be losing it here.
I know. And I don't know why this keeps happening at every club he goes to. I mean, I guess it actually really didn't at Inter. He left, he left when they won the Champions League.
Right.
Yeah. But it certainly happened at Real Madrid and the first time he was at Chelsea. So, yeah very strange. This is a hard one to predict, you know. I mean, in terms of the actual scoreline, but in terms of, you know, who you'd want to have from a fantasy point of view, I mean, I guess there's no one you'd bench in this game. I guess I would probably bench if you had a West Ham defender, if you had Jenkinson or Cresswell, would you bench them in this game?
I would consider it. I mean, I was just thinking Costa seems, I would be happy to have Costa in this game.
Yeah, I would too. I would expect Chelsea to score. I mean, I guess with Cresswell in particular, you can get assists, but I don't know. If it was like a 50-50 thing, I would lean towards benching the West Ham.
Yeah, I predict a 1-0 Chelsea win.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty plausible scoreline. I really admire this West Ham team, by the way. I love that they're in fourth place right now.
That's really nice of you to say.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I just like them. They're fun. They're the fun mix of players. It's just like an easy team to root for.
Yeah, and Slaven Bilic is, at first sight, just looks like kind of a caretaker manager sort of figure.
Mm-hmm.
But he's really taken hold, and that team is clearly playing for him. He's invested in the club.
Change your tune on Bilic slowly. He's won you over. All right, so that gets us to the final Saturday fixture, Arsenal-Everton. I love the way Arsenal's playing right now. I'm really planning. I would be very surprised if I didn't captain Sanchez in this game. It seems very risky not to captain Sanchez. I mean, I guess it still seems very early to me to start making differential captain choices. I mean, you know, you do it too often early in the season, and suddenly you're 100 points back instead of 30. You know,
suddenly you're only in the top 800,000 instead of the top
400,000. Well, I had a season like this a couple years ago where I stubbornly resisted bringing in Luis Suarez for way too long, and I kept making these differential captain choices, and he kept scoring two or three goals in every game.
Yeah,
and I was like, nope, it's gonna stop, and when it does, I'm gonna move my differentials through, and I'm gonna pick up all these points, and it just didn't stop, and suddenly I was like 160 points back.
Yeah,
and there was just, you know, the season was kind of over. So I know, not to be that dramatic about this Arsenal. I mean, you know, Everton Certainly could keep it close. This could be like a 0-0 game or a 1-1 game, but I feel very comfortable captaining Sanchez in this game.
Yeah, I'd like to see how Everton play after the being demoralized by Manchester United. And this is the game week prior to Everton going into their incredible stretch of fixtures.
Yeah.
So just curious to see how battle-scarred all those players are.
The famous stretch.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone keeps talking about it, but, you know.
It is true, though. It's incredible.
It's like somebody talking about a foreign investment that seems like it's really going to pop. But you're like, I don't know. I don't really know enough about it. I don't give you my money.
All right. So yeah, I would think like 3-1 Arsenal seems like a reasonable scoreline here. I could see Everton getting a call.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'll look out for this Everton girl too. She sounds great.
she's awesome. All right. So we got on to Sunday. We've got the Sunderland Newcastle match. I don't know, the interesting one, right? I mean, it's the first MLS match at home.
Yeah, Sunderland always have a new manager before a Tyne-Wear derby, and they always seem to win.
They won the last three, maybe four?
Yeah, give or take. Sounds about right. Mm-hmm. So those stats favor Sunderland here?
Yep, those stats would favor those the kind of stats that don't mean anything anymore. Yeah. Favor Sunderland. Newcastle scored 6 goals against a Norwich team that has given up some goals. I mean, it's not like they've been chipping goals like a Leicester level.
They're a generally organized outfit, but they're not watertight.
Not watertight. Yeah. I would never say that, certainly.
Sounds like you just took a drink of water as I was saying that, too, just to sort of throw it in my face.
We hired a Foley artist for this episode.
It's incredible.
Yeah. So God knows what's going to happen in this one, right? Here's my prediction. 3-2 Sunderland. I think that I could see Stephen Fletcher playing pretty well in this game. I could say, I don't know. I just think Sunderland's going to be really revved up for this game. And not only is it derby, but, you know, it's kind of like hope springs eternal with a new manager, you know? And I don't know. It's disappointing that they lost to West Brom away, but that, yeah, it's pretty hard to score a goal in West Brom. So
I have this dream of DeAndre Yedlin scoring a goal in this game and him having absolutely no idea how to react. Because imagine sweet little DeAndre Yedlin from the Pacific Northwest of America.
How many times would Solomon Rondon spin him around if he scored a goal? I hope he would drive over from West Brom.
But I just want him to score a goal and him to just look into the audience with just this look of complete confusion on his face.
Yeah, he was on the Men in Blazers podcast recently, and I was reminded how much I dislike any podcast that has a current active player on the team. Because there's nothing more anodyne than a player who is like on a team that's currently playing.
Sure, both teams played hard sort of interview.
Yeah, they'd never ever want to say anything interesting. Like it's too dangerous. It's just not worth it.
Okay, so I'll go with your 3-2. I've got a Mitrovic itch going into this game. I'll tell you that much.
A Mitrovic,
exactly.
All right, Bournemouth, Spurs. So the Bournemouth thing is really – it's really tough because they just – and this is one of the reasons why I ended up bringing in Boney is because their center back situation is a disaster. I mean they you know, they're on their third string center back right now.
Yeah.
And so if you play a team with a strong forward as they did, you know, last week against Boney. I mean Boney is not in great form, but he's certainly – He looked very, you know, he was very threatening in that game.
Yeah. The whole Bournemouth team is a bit of a train wreck right now. I mean, Glenn Murray's, he scored a couple goals. He's not looked terrible, but Matt Ritchie has been largely silent.
Yeah.
Their defense, as you're saying, is kind of in tatters. I don't know what it is to get behind in this team.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, I know Kane has not been playing very well this year. I would, if I had Kane, I would consider captaining Kane in this game.
Yeah.
Agreed. Which seems like very risky given his performance so far, but I think it's one of the safer picks.
Yeah. This is the most interesting transfer game in that you could look at Kane, you could look at Eriksen, you could look at a number of Spurs defenders to bring in. And I think you'd be assured of getting points.
Yeah, definitely kicking myself for not bringing in a Spurs defender.
Yeah. So I was hinting at their run of fixtures coming up after this coming week. They're home hosting Villa. Then they have the North London derby, which is what could warn you off. Then they host West Ham. Then they host Chelsea.
Yeah, so I think that was what, in the end, you know, dissuaded me a little bit. But
yeah, there's a lot to scare you off there.
Yeah. Okay, so it brings us to the Manchester Derby Sunday morning / Sunday afternoon if you're in the country of England.
Daylight savings time is happening. Daylight
savings time happens.
Which is very confusing for us because we look at the Eastern Standard Times here on, at least I do, on my on my little phone,
One thing we're reasonably sure of is that a match is going to start on Sunday that features Manchester United and Manchester City. Playing each other, hopefully.
Yeah, we could be 5 hours behind. We could be 4 hours behind.
Yep. So the Manchester Derby takes place, and it is one I'm very much looking forward to. Even without Aguero, I think that Man City looks very threatening. We didn't even talk about Raheem Sterling. And that is turned into a very anonymous hat trick for some reason.
He
didn't get 3 bonus points. I can't remember the last time someone got a hat trick and didn't get 3 bonus points.
Well, Raheem, if it was going to be anyone, it was going to be Raheem. Mm-hmm. And what's even more interesting is talking about the essential players as we were earlier in this podcast. Are there any essential Man City players? I mean, a lot of us have Kevin De Bruyne. Is he essential? Probably the most essential of them if you're looking at form.
For a player who only got 1 assist in that match, I thought he looked fantastic.
Yeah, he was. He had a couple of really
good saves. Yeah,
yeah.
Federici had a very poor game, but brought out his very best whenever he was playing, or whenever there's a shot from Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, which was very angered me. So
if you were captaining him, yeah. So I'm going to predict a Man City upset in this game, even though I know Man U just won 2-0 and looked good. I'm going to predict a 2-0 Man City win.
No, and you would even call that an upset.
I think so. I mean, it's at Old Trafford,
right? Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah, I accept that.
Yeah, I mean, Man U and Man City are 2 points separated in the league right now, and yeah, that seems. I think that's enough. That would be enough.
I agree. I'm having a hard time imagining how the goal is going to take shape for United in this game. I would expect like it would be something along the lines of what Martial was doing, 3 or 4 weeks ago.
That Man U game was crazy for having like no fantasy implications. All of those goals, it was incredible. Just it was all these random players connecting on goals. I mean, I don't understand why Ander Herrera doesn't play more often.
Yeah, I was just going to say, is Herrera like the ultimate non-FPL factor? Great, like more people probably have Morgan Schneiderlin in their squad, a like holding midfielder than they do Ander Herrera.
Yeah, it's true.
I'd go with you on that one. I have trouble seeing. I think City's going to win. De Bruyne is. I mean, there's like a 5% temptation.
It'd be interesting to see if Martial starts to come back. I mean, once they play this Man City match, it's been kind of a tough run for Man U, but their way to Crystal Palace, which I suppose could still count as kind of a tough game, given that Crystal Palace's defense has seemed to have tightened up a little bit the last couple weeks. I mean, you can't blame them for Dwight Gayle's red card. No. But then they're home to West Brom, away to Watford, away to Leicester, home to West Ham, away to Bournemouth, home to Norwich. So, I mean, really starting in week 12, you have an Everton-style run of fixtures coming up. I mean, you'd be looking at bringing in a defender and possibly either blind or not blind. no Daily Blind. Possibly Mata or Martial. All right, and then the last match is Liverpool Southampton.
Intriguing.
Intriguing match. Yeah. I know I have a Liverpool defender still, Martin Skrtel, who gave me 9 points last week somehow.
Yeah, I have Nathaniel Klein, and man, that bonus points. You pointed this out to me that it was just the fact that there were like 0 crosses at all in that game that all the points went to the central defenders.
Yeah, exactly. I think
and Skrtel hits a ball with his head in the penalty area like once every 15 seconds. I think is the rate.
You may remember that Southampton played a great match here last year where Tadic scored a winning goal pretty late in the game, like 80th minute, I'd say.
Huh. I'm having trouble remembering this. Is that the one where he took his shirt off?
Yeah, for like 10 minutes. It was like
he just played without his shirt for the rest of the game.
Yeah, he did. Incredible. It was crazy. Yeah. He had a full tattoo of the Southampton kit with his shirt off, so they let it go.
It's like that Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue where the women have, like, the body paint thing going on.
Yeah, it was like that. So I think given how knocked up that doesn't sound right. Given how injured this Liverpool team is right now, Southampton kind of seems like the better option to me. If I were, you know, I would expect a better option in terms of, you know, picking up some goals in this game. So
agreed.
Yeah, I think I'd feel better about having. I would rather start here's a question: if you had a Southampton defender and a Liverpool defender, who would you be more inclined to start in this game?
Southampton defender.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I mean, because really,
it's brother fighting brother in this game. It's Bertrand versus Klein.
Because Benteke, we're pretty sure he's still out, right? I don't think there's any.
He's like at 70 or 50 or 25% now.
Yeah, he's got the 75% now. But his hamstring injuries, you know, you really can't play anybody until they're fully healed. You know? So if Benteke doesn't start, then you're really still counting on Origi to do something. And I mean, he looked threatening at times in that game, but other than that, I mean, you're really, you know, Coutinho is one of those players who it's like he only scores great goals.
Yeah.
You know, so he's actually only scored one goal this year, and that was that goal in the game week one.
Yeah.
So I think he had two assists a couple weeks ago, but
a goal which bore a lot of unhappy fantasy managers, I'm guessing, who bought him immediately afterward.
Yeah, I mean,
and then he got a red card, and
in the 9 game weeks this season, he actually has attacking points in only 2 of those game weeks. The late goal at Stoke, and then in game week 7, he had 2 assists against Aston Villa. So he's only picked up 3 bonus points all year too. I mean, he's not crazy expensive, but yeah, certainly not a player you want to bring in. But I feel like this is an interesting match because it'll be interesting to see if someone emerges from that Liverpool team as a Klopp star, you know, somebody that he really either, you know, starts to run the attack through or seems to be getting chances credited for him by other players. I don't know. I mean, I think
why not Lallana?
I'm looking forward to this.
Not even based on the famous hug, but Lallana is a great attacking player that just never seemed to click under Rodgers.
Yeah. I like Ibe.
And, of course, Lallana. There are a lot of these guys on the Liverpool team playing against their former teammates on Southampton. Lallana, Klein.
Yeah, that is true, actually. Yeah, that is kind of a strange twist to this match. Jordan Ibe got 4 minutes in this game. Obviously not somebody you want to bring in right now. But he's a 4.6 million midfielder, so if he started to consistently get some minutes under Klopp, he'd be your natural Westwood replacement.
Yeah, I like Ibe. I'm a fan. I'm a fan.
We're both saying I like Ibe like I like Ike, right?
We got to get those pins made.
We should get those for BlazerCon.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, speaking of, we're planning on going to Men in Blazers BlazerCon convention here in New York City, which is happening in mid-November. I think it's November 13th and 14th. Mm-hmm. So if any other cheaters out there are planning to be at BlazerCon, definitely hit us up on Twitter and we'll try and meet up. And we're trying to make some cool little buttons for all the cheaters that we can wear, we can pass around. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, if you have any button suggestions, let us know.
Yeah.
Or like the slogan suggestions.
So speaking of ways to reach out to us, we still encourage you to join our public league, Hail Cheaters. You can do so at our website, alwayscheating.com. Just hit the league tab there. Also find the league code at our Twitter page. That's at Hail Cheaters. We've got Facebook and Instagram and all that crap, too, so you can follow us there.
All right, Brandon.
Yeah. Well, good podcast. Don't forget to subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud. You'll find us there. Do you feel sufficiently optimized, Josh?
I do. I feel like we went to the optimizer. I feel good. I feel rested somehow, even though I've stood and talked for an hour and 40 minutes.
You record this standing up.
I do. Yeah, like a standing desk.
That's awesome. That's good advice to all those burgeoning podcasters out there. All right. Well, good luck to you in game week 10. Poku forever.
Poku forever. Hail Cheaters.